Time to catch up with David Reneke, Astro Dave we call him. The website he works from is davidreneke.com. It's a great little resource tool if you want to look and see what's on it. Welcome, David. Good to have you back, mate.
Good to be back with you, Bill Coo.
Mate, Vulcan, does it exist? What's the story, my friend?
What a story. What a genius that Gene Roddenberry was. You know, here's a man who created that series that we all grew up with, didn't we, in the 60s, yeah. Star Trek. And Gene Roddenberry was the brains behind that. He saw things that we didn't see back then. He saw things that have, you know, that he envisioned will be, and they've become a reality now. You've only got to look at the series. We're using a lot of that technology today.
Well, those communicators they use very much looking like mobile phones that we've all got glued to our ears now.
Yeah, they do. I mean, the tricorder and all the things McCoy used to scan the body with, you know, these things are being used in hospital. Let's go back to Vulcan, though. Now, he wanted his character, Spock, to come from another world, an alien world, but not too far away. So what Roddenberry did, on the advice of some Harvard astronomers, he picked out Eridani, Starkov 40 Eridani A. We knew about it then. We thought that there was a planetary system there. We're not sure. Nobody on the world or in the world could tell at that stage whether there were any planets around this star.
Yeah, right.
And this is the part that fascinates me with Roddenberry. He invented this planet called Vulcan, heavy, hot, and much bigger than our Earth. And for gosh sakes, decades later, guess what they found?
They found Vulcan.
Planet in exactly the same spot that Roddenberry said, around that star that fits the profile.
See, Vulcans also had green blood, apparently. I mean, that's just a physiological, you know, description, yep. And you know, he made that up. But imagine beings who are living a life where copper's the you know, the main building block of the world, and that's hence where their blood came from. But I mean, Gene's no fool. He was amazing.
Well, look, you know, he was way ahead of his time, and there's something about Gene Roddenberry not many people know about. When he died in 1992, they put his ashes into a little container and put them on the space shuttle Columbia and sent him into space. So he got his wish eventually. But here's a man who was, you know, way ahead of his time.
Yeah.
And the series itself, it was one of those series, Bill Coe, that told you that this could be possible. You know, these sort of things may happen. And I think in the future we will have things like starships that'll move at these speeds that they talked about, but still it's just still science fiction at the moment.
Yeah. Star Trek always provided a great look at the future, a very positive look at the future. And I think Jimmy Doohan, the guy who played Scotty in Star Trek, had his ashes scattered, or was
it
on the International Space Station? What was that?
He did. Yep.
Yeah. Okay.
You can get buried in space now. There's a company called Celestis. C-E-L-E-S-T-I-S that specialise in space burials. I think it's about $5,000.
Why doesn't that surprise me? Anyway.
Hey, in America, though.
Yeah, of course. Now, space tourism is a thing. We're actually actively talking about it. We're investigating it. There's companies putting money up. Got new research about what happens to the body in space, something that these companies may have to think about, insure for or something?
Yeah, I mean, there are things that happen to the human body, but things that we undergo in space that, you know, just don't relate to normal life, and we've got to get used to that. We've got to understand that we're in an alien environment here, and you lose calcium from your bones, your blood changes, muscles deteriorate, but that's only after a fair amount of time. Space tourism is not going to be as dangerous as what we thought.
Right.
If you're only up there for a week or two, maybe a month, it's not going to hurt you that much, as long as you do a bit of exercise.
Right,
and, you know, take the required supplements and nutrients and everything like that, but it would appear that the danger is more in the mind. The fear is more in the mind. The repercussions of space travel are not as severe as what we thought. So that's going to put a lot of people back into the game. So there you go. That's basically in a nutshell. But after that, long voyages, of course, are the ones that we have to worry about. These journeys of many months at a time, 7 months to Mars, for instance, you know, and then 5 years to the outer planets. These are the circumstances we've got to face where major changes in the body do take place. But look, medicine's good. I mean, we can counter these with drugs and and exercises and things like that and diet. So being worked on now. Nobody's got a full working pattern for it, but, I mean, it's only a matter of time before we do.
Yeah, but, David, I don't think it's practical, though, until we can find a way of, you know, letting us, you know, we have these movies where people go to sleep for 40 years and then wake up when the spaceship's near its destination. I mean, we still don't have that sort of technology sorted yet.
But you look at that. I mean, the theory behind that is, yeah, you hibernate and you don't age. You get to a planet, 100 years later. You've got no one you can relate to when you come back. Everybody's gone. You know, you've travelled into the future, basically. You haven't aged much, but everyone you knew when you came back from your trip is all gone, and you've got no one to share it with. I don't know. It's like a double-edged sword, that one. But anyway, look, space travel and space tourism are on our doorstep. Somebody asked me about that this morning on an interview I did with an ABC station earlier on who brought that up. And I think it bears repeating that we're probably at the same stage they were in 1903 when the Wright brothers were flying their plane.
Yeah.
Nobody else was doing that. And then all of a sudden, bingo, when they got that in the air, there were quite a few others.
We're going to find that one bit of technology that will suddenly put us leaps and bounds ahead of where we need to be. We'll find some way to bend space. And I'm thinking that is the only way we can make space tourism viable, that is to, you know, cut these vast distances to seconds or minutes, you know?
Well, there may be a technology we don't know about. We don't know a lot about physics at the moment, Bill. It's only a brand new science to us.
Yeah.
I mean, most of the world scientists who ever lived are still alive today.
Yeah, incredible. Anyway, that's something we'll all look forward to. And look, I'm sure a lot of these companies will have their insurance bills covered, but a lot of people want to be careful about taking on space tourism. They have to sign some indemnity or be prepared for what happens to their bodies in the future. And the best thing is, as we discussed last time we chatted, David, is that you don't need a lot of clothing because it doesn't get dirty in zero gravity.
No, you don't. You don't sweat in space. You can't cry. If the fear's there, no one's going to see it. And you can't perspire. So it's quite a relaxing sort of a thing. But, you know, we talked about this before. Sure we did. There are three main contenders here ready to put people, paying passengers, into space. But the reality is here. This is an actual fact. Space tourism is no longer a realm of science fiction, Booker. It's on our doorstep.
Yeah, looking forward to that. Now, tell us about Breakthrough Watch. This sounds exciting.
Breakthrough Watch is searching for planets around other stars. We're focusing on Alpha Centauri. Why are we doing that? Because one of the stars in the Alpha system is pretty much like our own. Look, you're only about 4.3 light years away. It's not that far from here. And there are two sun-like stars, Alpha Centauri A and B, but there's a little red dwarf called Proxima. Proxima means close in Latin. The current knowledge of Alpha Centauri system is that one of these stars there is very much like our own sun, about the same age, same size, the same heat range. Given that, there could be planets around that star. And what we're looking at, the latest observations show that there is some rocky stuff there.
Ah, right.
Whether it's an asteroid belt or whether we're looking at a planetary system forming, I don't know, but there could be planets already formed around it. If we do, I mean, there's a good chance if there's a planet around that star and it's the right distance away from its star, there's no reason to assume that there couldn't be life on that planet.
Well, rocky planet means possible gravity for a start, because the rock sort of got to coalesce, hasn't it, to form this body. Atmosphere,
well,
another story.
Yeah, this is one of those studies that complements SETI at the moment, and the holy grail of astronomy, of course, as I mentioned before to you, the holy grail that everyone's looking for is the evidence of other people out there. Are we alone? That's the question.
Are we alone? You and I know we're not, but a lot of people still like to dispute that information. Isn't there a survey saying that at least, is it 80% plus now believe in some form of alien life? It's pretty much accepted now, isn't it?
Yeah, you go back 30 years ago, but you take that same statistics, only 20%.
Yeah.
People now, because of the movies we talked about, Bilko, because of Star Trek and Star Wars and other things like that, you know, we're becoming more and more attuned to the fact that life could be out there. People today are more accepting of contacts than we were way back. And, of course, in the 50s and 60s, it's something that we were feared of. because we were programmed by all these B-grade science fiction movies that we're going to be overtaken. But I think that's silly thing.
Yeah, it is silly talk. One final thing, David. We mentioned last time we chatted, you investigating some sort of tourism to Norfolk Island. How's that going? How's that progressing?
Yeah, we've been asked by Norfolk Island Tourism to kickstart tourism on the island there, Bilko. And thanks for reminding me of that, because we're looking at December now. We're hoping to get a group of people. There are only 20 seats, by the way. And we're going to take them over there, spend a whole week on Norfolk Island. We'll be doing tours of the island as well. We've got a lot of astronomy through the night. So we look at the planets and the stars and galaxies and nebula. It's a place that's only been recently been given dark sky accreditation. So it is officially a dark sky site. And what that means is one of only a few places around the world where the skies are crystal clear. So we're looking at doing that between now and the end of the year. And if any of your listeners are keen on that, just go to my website and have a look at the details if you want to. It's a bit over $2,000. It's not too bad for a seven-day holiday.
No.
All your airfares, you've got a seven-day, you've got a car for 7 days and all those. So it's davidrenicke.com, davidrenicke.com.
So you're getting off fairly lightly because you've got the brains trust of you and your friend who have got all this knowledge about how to observe the night sky and make it look, you know, relevant and beautiful. So
well, it's all done in an easy, relaxed style. We don't hit them with any heavy science. And we've purchased some very, very big telescopes. They're currently on the island now. So we're hoping it takes off, pardon the pun, and if it does, it'd be good.
All right, more at davidrenicke.com. We'll chat next time. David, thank you.
Thanks, Bill Coates.